This bonus podcast is a conversation between the three Dudley Farm board members who worked on this audio tour. Maria Trumpler and Sharon Bloom have been involved with the Dudley Farm for only a few years, but Jim Powers was here since the beginning and has written a book called Saving the Farm about the early years. So, Jim, what did the farm look like when the Dudley Foundation acquired it in 1994?
It was, to say politely, a mess. Yet it was historically a encapsulation of what a farm would have looked like around 1900. It was certainly a rare specimen of that time period. And we probably owe that to the last owner, David Dudley, who, following the death of his parents in the 1960s, never really touched or changed anything. So the house prior to our acquiring it was loaded with antiques, for example, that spanned 300 years. Unfortunately for us, those antiques left when the will was made out. And what we were left with was a house that was pretty much in ruins. David had lived in two rooms. He had lived in the dining room and what we now call the office. The rest of the house had been closed off. And what we inherited was a dusty house full of peeling plaster and wallpaper. The barns weren't much better. David was not a farmer and had sort of tended the fields minimally. He did have people come in hay, but for the most part, he kept no animals, so the barns were left full of all the farm equipment that had probably been in the farm for at least the last 100 years. To say the least, I have to give credit to the North Guilford Volunteer Fire Company members who had inherited this farm through David Dudley's will. It would have been much easier for them to sell the property to a developer. David had gotten many offers from developers in his later years. One story was that one developer actually offered him $10 million for the 10-acre property, which he, of course, refuted by saying, "What would I do with your money?" Which is a wonderful old Yankee way of looking at life, I think. So getting back to the North Guilford Volunteer Fire Company members, they saw something different in the farm. They realized that they needed somehow to save it. In the 1990s and 1980s, Guilford had gone through a tremendous transformation that saw all the farms being sold, dairy farms shut down, and replacing these farms in many places were housing developments. And some of the older members of the fire company realized that they were losing what they saw as their heritage for North Guilford and for Guilford and the region in general. And miraculously, they decided that they wanted to save the farm, save the 10 acres, the house, and the barns. They weren't sure what to do with it. One option was to rent out the farm to maybe a young farm family so they could continue the farm. But soon the discussion evolved into saving the farm and making it into a farm museum to show people what farming had once been like in the region. That's one reason why I got involved along with a couple of other people. They formed a small committee of individuals interested in seeing if that could be happen, which evolved eventually into the Dudley Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that has owned and operated the farm ever since.
So I'm curious, how did a bunch of volunteer firemen come up with the funding to develop and renovate these buildings and create a museum when they were probably from farming backgrounds themselves?
That is still a wonder, as far as I'm concerned. These were really individualistic people who had learned how to come together as a group through the Volunteer Fire Company. They had no expertise in terms of fundraising, certainly in terms of the building trades and things like that. Many of them were quite skilled. But they had decided that they would try to do early on a number of different fundraising activities, mostly open houses to invite the public to kind of see and ask for donations. In Guilford, there's a wonderful organization called the Guilford Preservation Alliance, who early on was interested in what we were doing at the farm. And they gave us a $26,000 grant, which was the seed money to begin the process. The first challenge was to actually try to start restoring the house, make it actually the northern section of the house, which was we turned into an apartment. We had to make that livable. So a lot of that early money went into that. And at the same time, Tom Letty, one of the present board members and early members as well, and I, who were teaching at Guilford High School, were able to organize a class for high school students in the afternoon where we taught about 19th century life, and they helped doing a lot of the early restoration, things like peeling the wallpaper and patching plaster and things like that, along with other members of the committee who volunteered their endless hours to just basically trying to clean and repair what they could, not only in the house but the barns. So a lot of it had to do with not necessarily the funds as much as it was sheer desire of individuals to donate their time to make it come alive.
It sounds like it was just a real North Guilford community effort.
It really was, and part of the wonder of it all, and I'll mention one individual by name. His name is Doug Williamson. Who was one of the early movers and shakers, not a member of the fire company, but a resident of North Guilford at the time. He became really focused on helping to generate interest beyond just North Guilford. And he was a skilled design and a building design person. He worked really hard trying to make connections with people who could donate. Sometimes it was to donate wood. Sometimes it was to donate even things as simple as gravel. And with his help, along with everyone else's work, we were able to sort of move forward to the point where we became the Dudley Foundation, a nonprofit organization in 1994.
So thinking about the renovation, what's one thing that you love to see renovated? What's one renovation that you think turned out really well?
Well, I have to say I'm probably really proud of how the house turned out. One of the things that was pivotal for us was that even though all the contents of the house were taken before we took it over, we had the inventory done by the probate of what exactly was in the house. And we were able, miraculously, when people began to come forward to donate items for the house, so many of them matched what had been in there that we were pretty much able to recreate what was in the house at the time of David's death. And when you visit the house today, you'll see those items, and it really gives you a sense of being in that house at that time period. I love walking into the dining room and sort of peeking into the kitchen, because it almost seems to me that Amy Dudley's in there. You really immediately feel at home in the place. And so for me, the house in so many ways evokes the time period like nothing else on the farm. And all the people who volunteered to make that happen, we owe them a tremendous amount of thanks.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jim. When I walked into the kitchen and the pantry of the house a few years ago, I'm really interested in 19th century women's history, particularly their embodied experience, particularly of food and cooking. And it just felt like I was transported 100 years into the past. The way the objects are laid out, the way that there's no plumbing is really amazing.
One of the other things about the restorations, which I thought was really tremendous, is early on we focused on the outbuildings, trying to assess exactly what was savable and what was not. Those that were savable all needed repair and restoration, and we were very cognizant of the fact that we wanted those repairs to be done as if it was the year 1900. Some of the buildings, for example, the bunkhouse and ox shed, were unsavable. Though we did have drawings done and photographs taken to sort of preserve them. So as we went forward, hopefully these things could be built as accurately as possible. The sugar house, for example, was in horrible disrepair and had to be taken down. But with the help of the Guilford Rotary Club, we were able to actually reconstruct it. And so when you come to our maple sugaring demonstrations, you're basically walking into the same building that the Dudleys did for 100 years. I'd like to hear from both of you in terms of what drew you to the farm to begin with. How about you, Sharon?
Yeah, so I moved to Guilford just a few years ago, and I really missed my big vegetable garden that I'd had for 25 years. And I heard that there were community gardens up at this place called Dudley Farm. I also heard you had to practically inherit a plot, but I put my name on the list and I got a plot right away. I also saw an ad in the paper that they were looking for docents for the farmhouse tours. And it was during COVID, and I desperately wanted a way to find a community of like-minded people and to be outdoors and connect with the land. So it just seemed like a perfect fit when I moved here. But what really struck me was the connection to the land and to see the lasting legacy of what it's like to tend the land. And I think that was something that I kind of inherited from my grandmother, that land should not just be beautiful to look at, but it should be productive. And when I think about not only the generations of Dudleys that lived on that land, but the Native Americans that came before them, and the land as a living legacy. And I guess that's what drew me to it, and that's what I'm hoping to foster as we go forward as an organization.
Yeah, I think for me, I had been to the farmers markets on Saturdays off and on over the years, but it was when there was a notice in the paper about the Dawnland Museum getting a rejuvenation and a new home, and I was getting really interested in the history of the Quinnipiac people and couldn't find information anywhere about it, and knew that this was a really nice collection of stone artifacts from the Quinnipiac. So I came to see it. I was met by a wonderful docent, Monique, who told me all about it, and then kind of worked my way into the amazing committee of, I don't know, I think there were like 15 people who worked really hard to make that happen. And I just love the collaborative work. I love the product. I love the way we tell the story with humility, but boldness at the same time. And I've also loved being a docent at that museum, of greeting people when they come in and finding out where they are in their learning about Indigenous people, and then helping them to use the paintings or the artifacts to deepen their understanding wherever they are.
What do you both see as the farm's future? I know you're involved now at a time of transition for the farm, because we had gone through the first basically 27 and a half years of focusing on restoring what was there and rebuilding what was there. But that period seems to be ending. I think the last big project we're having right now is the sawmill, which is nearing completion. What do you both see about the future of the farm?
I can really see how most of the first few decades were about restoring and creating a 19th century farm. What I see as the future is community outreach and educating a local population that as we become even more technologically connected, somehow we become disconnected with the land and with each other. And through the farmers market, we're bringing people together. I see a lot of workshops. I see opportunities for school groups, for seniors who maybe no longer have an opportunity to be out in nature. So I really see it as a time of outreach.
Yeah, I'm really hoping to find a way to have people come back to the farm regularly so that they don't just say, oh yeah, I've done a tour of the farmhouse. I've seen the Dudley Farm. I know that I come 3 to 4 times a week to the Dudley Farm, and I am always learning something. I'm always noticing something. Jim, I'm always peppering you with questions and learning something. Preparing this this audio tour, I learned so much about the history of the farm. But I think really getting people to see that it's a resource for community, for learning, for engagement with history, with the land. Yeah, so we're all hoping that that will be the case. And of course, this audio tour is an outreach effort to encourage you all to come and engage with the farm repeatedly. So as we're wrapping up this conversation, I just wanted to ask each of you, in doing this audio tour, which has taken us 6 months, what's one thing that you enjoyed or learned from doing this tour? Jim?
Well, early on, as we were in those early days when we were first beginning to work with creating the museum, one of the things that struck me almost immediately was the fact when people got out of their car and started to walk either towards the barns or the house or the land, they always had a smile on their faces. And that's what I want to see continue, and I know that's what we see now, and I know that's what we're going to see in the future. So,
my first few years connected with the Dudley Farm, it seemed that people would go to the house, to the farmhouse, which is absolutely wonderful and worth many visits, but they wouldn't spend a lot of time on the grounds. And I think with this walking tour, it encourages them to linger a little longer and to learn about things like millstones. I had no idea how millstones operated. So I hope people take the time.
Great. Thanks. And for me, I think it was the challenge of trying to think about the land as an archive, the land as a museum itself. What can we learn from the land about all of the people who have lived here? And I was kind of amazed and slightly impressed how in preparing this audio tour, how much you can actually do that if your eyes and heart and soul are attuned to that issue. So I just want to thank Sharon and Jim and all of you who have listened, and we hope you enjoyed this.